Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. For this week's episode, I have an interview with David Nixad, who is from EI Ventures, and you can check out his website. It's the letters E and I dot ventures, and he is a venture capitalist who is looking to raise money for psychedelic healthcare products. And that's what our conversation is about. And I know that this is kind of a sensitive issue for some people, that they're very concerned about money and big business and big pharma getting into psychedelic healthcare. And David is not one of those folks. So I invite you to listen to our conversation today and see what you think. Whether anybody likes it or not, businesses are going to be getting involved in psychedelic healthcare. It's just a fact of the matter. And of course, we had Peyton Nyquist on just the other week, dealing with kind of similar business ventures in Canada. And so David is operating here out of the United States and actually is looking to be globally positioned to provide products for psychedelic healthcare, and with the goal of making it affordable and accessible for everyone. So that'll be up in just a minute, but first, a few quick announcements. I would like to thank James, Brian, Brooke, Rick, and especially Branimir for making a generous donation to the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast over this past week. If you would like to be a supporter of this podcast, it's quite easy. Just stop by my personal webpage, martinball.net, and you can use the PayPal link that's at the top right of the page. Or, what's even more fun is if you join me over at Patreon at patreon.com/martinwball. There's also a link for that at my personal webpage, martinball.net. You become a monthly supporter and then receive all the bonuses, gifts, and prizes and whatnot by being a member over at Patreon. Also, just to remind everybody out there, if you are looking for some non-dual entheogenic integration, I am, of course, still available for 30, 60, and 90-minute consultations. It is a great pleasure and honor of mine to get to speak with people every week from literally around the world, talk to them about their experiences and what's going on with them, and where they're at in terms of their process of opening up with psychedelics and entheogens. If you would like some assistance with that, you can also check out my webpage, nondualentheogenicintegration.com, or more information at my website, martinball.net. And also thanks to everybody who joined in on the 5-MeO and non-duality Zoom group call last week. That was a lot of fun. We went almost an hour long. It was a great conversation. Really enjoyed doing that. And of course, I'm open to doing more of that in the future. Coming up this week, I'm going to be interviewed a couple different times, and I will let you guys know when those interviews come out. But wheels are in motion, things are happening, and life goes on, as it tends to do. So let's go ahead and get to the conversation with David Nixad. Once again, his website is EI, the letters E and I dot ventures. And if you're a venture capitalist and want to get in on this, well, hey, here's your chance. But let's let David tell you all about it. Here's our interview from last week. Hope you enjoy. Yeah, well, thanks so much for joining me today, David. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, I first came across you, saw something on Facebook and looked interesting. So I clicked through and I got the PDF, and I actually have it here open on my computer right now, The Psychedelic Revolution, Investing in the Future of Mental Wellness with David Nixad. Yep. And read through it, and it's all quite interesting, and I thought it would make an interesting topic for the podcast here, especially as psilocybin therapy is just becoming legal here in Oregon. We're in the 2-year development period over what that program is going to look like. Just last week, I had a fellow on from Canada that apparently they're going to be legalizing psilocybin and MDMA therapy throughout Canada. So the changes are coming, and I think that the investing in money side is a very interesting angle on the topic, as well as the development of startup businesses and, you know, the question of who's going to be supplying for legal therapy and all the rest of that. And I'll just start with the full financial disclosure, in the sense that, you know, I have never
been in investing, you know, I make about 20 grand a year through self-employment. You know, I'm kind of at the bottom rung of the economic ladder, personally speaking. I had some stocks a long time ago and had to cash those out to pay for rent and pay for food. So the whole world of finance it's a world I've never been in at all. But you seem to be someone.
I mean, you're a very lucky guy. I mean, I would say you have your head on straight.
Oh, well, I do my best to keep it on. Every once in a while it comes on. But it's an interesting area. And it's also an area that I think is, for many people in the psychedelic community, it seems to almost be a taboo subject for some people about talking about the financial side of things, the corporation side of things, the business side of things.
No. Yeah. I think if you're coming at it from the right place and, you know, you really, you know, psychedelics for me, the word that comes up for me is always empathy and access. And I think that if those are your mantras, how you do anything is how you do everything. That's always what we like to say in our company. So intention and access and empathy. And that's what we really, you know, that's our bedrock of our business.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great motto to work by. And of course, the reality is that we do live in a capitalist financial system. This is the world that we live in, that people make money. People have to work for money. People have jobs. You know, we all pay for healthcare, you know, in one form or another. But it was interesting that here with the legalization of psilocybin therapy in Oregon, there actually was a pushback by a number of people within the psychedelic community in Oregon saying, oh, well, it's going to corporatize it all and it's going to push out the little guy. So, you know.
Well, the pushback actually became because the people that were working on that, there were a lot of questions onto, was it an inside job? And I think that as you see what has taken place with the hedge funds and GameStop, you know, everything in the capitalistic world, everything is an inside job. And I think when I talked to a lot of the people that were against it, it was really because the people that are setting up to provide those therapies were talking about $10,000 therapy sessions. So anytime that there's not access and inclusion and actually what we like to say equitable parity, you're going to have a pushback. And I think the beauty of what we saw with Wall Street Bets is that people will push back. So, you know, hopefully, I think we're in a different world right now with social media and everything else. It's everybody has to be accountable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lack of a lot of that on social media and sort of the information bubbles that people are living in today. But let's kind of, I'd like to start just by kind of getting to know you a little bit more, and then we can really dig into the business side of things and the finance side of things, and then also, of course, talk about what are the possibilities for people to get involved. First, let's get to know you a little bit. You know, in reading through your PDF, The Psychedelic Revolution, it does talk a little bit about how you kind of got started with the cannabis industry. Tell me a little bit about you, David. Where you come from? What's your background? How you got into all of this?
You know, my background is I've always been a perpetual entrepreneur. I mean, as far as I remember, I was 7 years old and I had my own snow shoveling business in Washington, D.C. And that sort of perpetuated from coming from a family of, you know, small business owners, but small business owners that ended up becoming big business owners on the premise of investing. And, you know, my family is very involved in the real estate industry. And I also have a lot of family members that are doctors. So I got to see kind of that world and, you know, how do people come as they immigrate from other countries back in the 60s and 70s and grow their wealth to, you know, what is, you know, what we have today. So, you know, I'm lucky enough to have seen and worked with my family members that grew big businesses from nothing. So having that sort of background really helped me in actually building companies that have a platform to stand on. I find that a lot of companies that are being built these days, they're on a trajectory that, you know, if things don't go the right way or the wind blows the wrong way, pieces are going to fall apart.
Yeah. So that was just something that you grew up with then. When did you decide that you wanted to get into finance?
I mean, my big step into finance was around when I was 16 and 17, and I was done living at home, and I ended up getting into the rave culture and the rave scene, and actually started designing websites and doing marketing for, you know, big parties in the Washington, D.C. area. So, you know, we were throwing raves from 5,000 people to 20,000 people. And so got a little bit of a taste. It's funny, a lot of people that I talk to back in that time look back and they're like, you know, the techno and rave scene was really sort of the foundation of kind of the tech scene. You know, if you really look at a lot of the tech entrepreneurs, we all grew up in that scene, and that scene had a lot of, you know, psychedelic drugs involved with it. So I think that, you know, this kind of immersion of psychedelics as it relates to technology companies and, you know, just the whole rave scene that started, it kind of goes hand in hand. And, you know, as Dr. Shulgin said, the inventor of MDMA, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a party drug. And I think when I look back at it, it wasn't about it being a party drug. It's, I think we were all We were all looking for something more back then. So mm-hmm. I was a kid, I was 16 and 17. And in a way, I started my journey down this road of being in the psychedelic industry, even as I moved out of my parents' house. And so I was sort of forced into the situation where I needed to be my own person. I wanted to live a certain way. And I became an entrepreneur at a really young age.
Yeah. So how did you get involved with the cannabis scene in California? And I believe California was the first state to legalize medical marijuana, I believe.
The first state to actually recreationally legalize it was Colorado. Yes, medical cannabis goes back to California even before Colorado. But I think that you know, when we really entered the space was back in, I would say, I would say somewhere around 2006 to 2008, where my co-founder and I really started looking at it and saying, okay, this is a business. People are something. It's actually funny. If you really look at the space today and you go back 10, 15 years from now, the advancements that we thought would be made, we haven't even reached the precipice of it. But, you know, originally where we got involved was advising companies that were in the delivery California scene, because back in between 06 to 2010, many people were in the delivery scene. We were also advising a number of companies that were making actually oil pens. And, you know, I think it was right around 2010 onwards where we actually started getting involved with companies like Speedweed, and we got involved with a company called Herbal Cure. And as that went along, you know, we made bigger investments in companies like Meadow, where we were the first check into. And really, our backbone as a company has always been built on compliance. Even when we invested in a company called Serica Pay back in 2014, that was involved in cannabis payments. And even in 2014, where maybe that was 10 years into medical cannabis, people weren't ready for it. So I think what makes us really good at what we do is we understand that anytime you want to look at these businesses, you have to look at them very longitudinally. And I think that the people that don't do that don't survive in any of these businesses.
So what do you mean by that? Longitudinally.
I mean, longitudinally, in 1 year from when, in basically 18 months from when EI came out and said, hey, we've been working on a psychedelic product, 300 companies went public in Canada in the psychedelic space. And what's comical about that is we believe that more than probably 90% of those companies don't have any type of product, nor do they have anecdotal evidence. So again, you have this rush for people to raise money and take companies public. And what ends up happening is the retail investor gets burnt. So what we did with psychedelics, which we didn't do with cannabis, is we really said, okay, with cannabis, we kind of almost took too much time. Like, we were waiting for rules to unfold and, you know, compliance was a very big deal. It's the same way with psychedelics, but it sort of gave us a roadmap on what to do and what not to do. Like, when you're surfing a wave, you don't want to overcharge, but you don't want to undercharge too. So I feel like with psychedelics, we've figured out this perfect way to say, okay, yeah, we're going to take our company public at some point in the future, but we're also looking at this as what is the next 10 years looks like and how do people actually get product? And I can tell you that our core conversation with our team and with investment bankers every day as we, you know, even go down the road of a public offering is access. How do people get access and how do they get affordable access? Mm-hmm. And I think that this is where a lot of people get it wrong. They're really stuck on how do we raise a lot of money and who knows if anybody will ever get access. No, our first thing is compliance, then it's access, then it's okay, we know we have to have this, you know, financial model behind it.
Yeah. So going back into the cannabis industry, isn't it still the case that cannabis companies can't use the banking system? Everything's
there are banks. Things have changed. There are credit card companies and there are banks that cannabis companies can use. As everybody has been on Clubhouse for the last week, I think as I even listen to people in the cannabis industry, even in these Clubhouse forums, the problem is I would guess that 80% of the cannabis industry is still operating as an illegal market. And I think what has happened, which is different with psychedelics, is we've allowed more companies to go public and people are willing to invest in psychedelic companies where the banking issue isn't a problem. With cannabis, we made banking and everything so difficult that once you go down a realm of operating a company illegally, you never turn back. And that's why there's been such a low percentage of people that are, you know, if you really look at the big publicly traded cannabis conglomerates, it's a very few. So a lot of the people we talk to state to state, it's very difficult for a small operator to actually be in compliance. You don't make any money in the industry because it's very costly.
Yeah. And of course, it's still illegal at the federal level. So that's kind of the next main hurdle with cannabis.
Totally.
is really changing the federal system. You know, the states have all been going ahead and doing it. And I think the majority of states now at least have either medical or both medical and recreational. But
you'd be surprised, even at the level of in Hawaii, like we have medical, we don't have recreational. But at the end of the day, like if you look at the decriminalization effort in psychedelics, how quickly it happened and how many people have bought onto it, it's become a better version of cannabis. It's unfortunate because cannabis is such a great product for a lot of people. You know, our goal is, and again, we don't get into politics, but our hope is that this administration understands that botanical medicines, not synthetic medicines, are the future for healthcare. And that's really what Emotional Intelligence Ventures, EI Ventures, stands for. It's the idea of botanical medicines being the new standard of pharma with an F.
Yeah, and there's definitely some interesting parallels if we're looking at cannabis and we're looking at psychedelics that, you know, obviously with cannabis, with marijuana, there was, you know, decades of sort of disinformation campaigns about, oh, this is the devil's weed, this will, you know, turn you into a schizophrenic, it'll turn you into a criminal. And then, you know, people actually started doing medical research and saying, no, and actually there's a lot of medical applications there. And we're seeing sort of a parallel track with psychedelics where it was like, oh, you'll go crazy. These are terrible. There's addictive. You lose your mind. And now we're just getting really overwhelming scientific evidence that actually there's an application in healthcare, let alone, you know, for creativity, insight, personal transformation, religious and spiritual purposes, you know, but the medical studies, they're all being done. And so we've got the evidence there, but then, you know, there is the inertia of the disinformation campaigns of, you know, really educating people about, well, what is psychedelic healthcare? And that's something that seems to be changing rather rapidly at this point, right? That, you know, there's more and more articles every day in different news outlets. It's becoming more mainstream. So we're seeing this change happen, but of course it's still only limited. Like here in the United States, Oregon is the only state that has now made this move to say, let's have psilocybin therapy. But I think we can expect to see that this is going to be happening in more places.
Yeah, I mean, we're heavily involved with Colorado, with Kevin Matthews. We received an email from the group in Florida that's working on it. I mean, this is going to happen one way or another, but it's up to us as human beings to hold everybody accountable. I appreciate what you said earlier. I usually get on phone calls with people and they're telling me, you know, how much money they have or how successful they are. And, you know, you gave me a real feedback of the empathy of how you live. And, you know, I appreciate that. I think when you're living a simple life, you're able to almost look at things in a more neutralized way. And, you know, I see a guitar in your background and I see maybe some instruments. I mean, there's an element where we are living kind of these Facebook social media lives that may not be real. Yeah. And I think that this idea of these plant medicines that can open up the neural pathways and bring your brain back to a place of what I call first attention, like when you were 3 years old or 5 years old, where there's not this like numbed down, biased way of thinking, I think is a really beautiful thing. I will tell you, like what I saw this past week in the news with everybody, it would be difficult as I think about a human coming into Earth, planet Earth, America, and how somebody that would turn on the TV or internet, it would be a lot to handle.
Yeah. What are those crazy humans up to?
Yeah.
Like steer clear of that planet, man. Don't go there.
There's a lot of information to decipher. And like I was listening to Elon Musk last night with, you know, Vlad in the Clubhouse chat room, and they're talking about Robinhood. And, you know, the reality of it is we've said this in venture capital for myself for the last 25 years, follow the money, follow the money. And whoever has the money behind it is usually the puppeteering the story. And so what our hope for is that with psychedelics, we can be that middle ground between the people that have the money and actually giving access to the masses. And that's really our purpose of Emotional Intelligence Ventures.
Yeah. So let's talk more about just as much detail as you want to give, what is Emotional Intelligence Ventures? And again, I'm going to reference and other people that you can go and you can find this. Anyone can find this. This is your PDF, The Psychedelic Revolution, Investing in the Future of Mental Wellness. And it really gets into detail about what EI Ventures is and the products that you're looking to develop and areas for investment. But let's hear it from you since we've got you here. Tell us all about it.
EI.Ventures was a company that was spun off out of its parent company, Orthogonal Thinker. And EI Ventures was a company that is developing products to empower your emotional intelligence. Every time we took a psychedelic, a real psychedelic, not ketamine, something like a magic mushroom or went on an ayahuasca journey, we felt that you were going to do these things in order to empower yourself. And again, these products are against the law. We don't advocate people to take them, but it was an idea of actually coming up with products and tools that people could actually use to empower themselves in what, again, we consider this kind of wild, wild world we're living in. Unfortunately, we went on a road show for 90 days back in the summer. We went to 10 different states, and most people that we talked to told us that they did not have a trusted company or establishment that they could believe in the United States. And that really made me think, as we were putting together this psychedelic revolution, handbook, it was like, okay, we are in a world now where you talk to a 90-year-old person or you talk to a teenager, nobody feels like they can trust anybody. How do we create a company?
Sorry, you're talking about trusting corporations and businesses in general, not just talking about psychedelics, we're talking about
we created a list of questions from do you trust what you buy at the supermarket? Do you know what you know if you're taking processed or, you know, foods that are non-processed? Do you take vitamins? Do you know what's in those vitamins? What do you think the difference between, eating an orange and eating a vitamin C tablet is? And what we found out is most people don't understand what they're putting in their body or on their body, let alone trusting in the information that they got. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really understood, okay, this is not just about these psychedelics. It's about creating a company that was trusted, that people knew that the products that we put out there are the applications we developed are things that are actually good for people. And that actually wasn't that simple. You'd be surprised, because when you're trying to do something good and you're trying to help people, people actually think you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's the worst part of the world that we're living in. Nobody trusts anybody. So we really made it our mantra to say, okay, we're going to develop all this information. We're going to put it out there and we're going to see how people respond to it. And it can either be the biggest disaster and it doesn't work out, or like the universe wants this. And, as we're in the process of closing our Series A financing and we're moving EI at a rapid pace, the world wants EI. The world wants emotional intelligence. We're receiving hundreds, thousands of emails and messages with people that want this company to succeed.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting just framing it around this idea of like people not trusting corporations, not trusting business, and that, what we've seen here through the pandemic, through coronavirus. I know some people out there listening, like, they don't like the whole idea of a pandemic. They think it's all a plot or whatever. I'm not one of those people. But what we've seen, of course, like I got laid off from my university teaching position because there were budget cutbacks at the university due to reduced enrollment. Lots of people have been laid off. Lots of people have lost their incomes. Yet at the same time, simultaneously, we have seen billionaires and their wealth increase dramatically. So many of us feel like the whole financial system, just the whole thing must be fucked if the wealthiest people keep getting wealthy and the rest of us are kind of like, we don't know where we're going to find the money to pay our next bill.
I will tell you the saddest thing we saw, and it's weird that, you know, you're talking about all this, because the first thing that comes to my mind is we were in Las Vegas watching a gentleman actually end up dying on the side of the road, have a seizure and end up dying. Obviously, we found out it was a drug overdose, but did you know that people were posing in front of this person and taking like Instagram and video shots while this was going on? And that's when I really knew. I go, we need a shift in consciousness. The world needs something different. We are so programmed with social media that we would sit there and videotape somebody dying on the side of the road instead of going and getting help for this person.
Yeah.
It was actually crazy when I think about it right now.
Yeah, just to get more likes on your Instagram feed. And that sort of this radical disconnect that seems to be happening within our society. And I really like the name emotional intelligence. You know, yeah. So for the audience, anybody who's not familiar with that, I mean, certainly what I know of the term emotional intelligence has been from psychiatrists and psychologists saying that we don't want to just measure your mathematical skills, your language skills, your memorization skills, but there's this whole other area of human development that they call emotional intelligence, and that is your ability to have compassion, your ability to have empathy, your ability to appreciate someone else's situation and have the proper emotional reaction to it, which, of course, what you're just describing is a complete lack of emotional intelligence. Here's somebody dying, and my first impulse is, let's take a selfie, right? That's someone who's really poor on the emotional intelligence spectrum.
Let me just put it to you this way. There were about 10 or 15 people doing that on Las Vegas Boulevard. So it's the world needs a shift in consciousness. I was actually reading somebody's book yesterday, and, you know, it was interesting. They were talking about, you know, when they look at what they're doing as their business culture, they're thinking about this as, you know, how do 7 billion humans actually get the financial strength to actually be in a good place? I don't think people realize, you know, every day when we go to bed, there are a lot of people on earth that are hungry. And for us, what we've always said is we know that a billion people need our products, at least. We have people drinking too much coffee, drinking too much alcohol, popping pills, self-medicating, sexual trauma, abuse. You need products, and it's not about psychedelics. I constantly tell people this. You need tools that are going to empower you that have this neutral state to them. And people want to trust the products that they're putting in their body. And that's really what we found, is that people don't trust because they don't know and they're not educated. So, you know, what came out of that is this psychedelic revolution handbook that we put together.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the products that you've got in there. And some of them are psychedelic and some of them are nutritional, mushroom based. So I'd also like to ask, like, where are you in the development stage of these different products? So tell us about the products and where you're at.
So we're very well known for our crown jewel product called Psilli. Psilli is a psilocybin botanical analog. It is a product that we believe could go to market immediately in therapeutic use. But we also understand that it needs to go down the FDA pipeline so it can actually be used by medical professionals and insurance people can actually prescribe this. So when we look at this specific product, we think about it as something that will be available in a therapeutic use model in Oregon, but also will be available, you know, 5 to 10 years down the line as an actual drug that the pharmaceutical industry prescribes. So the problem right now, and a lot of people don't like to talk about this in the psychedelic space, is that when you're taking a product down the FDA pipeline, the product usually takes 10 plus years and hundreds of millions of dollars. First of all, nobody's raised $500 million in the space. Secondly, nobody has been working on it for that long to actually be anywhere near for this product to be approved down the FDA pipeline. The only person that is even close to that is MAPS, and they still have a number of years between before MDMA will actually be legalized through phase four trials. I think there's a lot of people that are also skewed by the whole corona, you know, the corona vaccines that have come out. We have to remember that the reason these products have been approved so quickly is they are emergency. They have what's called an emergency approval. We're not sure what these products are going to do to you after you take them. There are no guarantees. So I think that as we are looking at this psychedelic revolution, why wouldn't we go back to the plants? Why wouldn't we go back to products that have been studied for a very long time through Israel, through Germany, through Japan, and the United States that says botanical matter, whether it's fungi or it's cannabis or whatever it is that gives you this entourage effect, it actually is good for you. It has limited side effects. And really what we've done with our analogs is we've created a better version of just taking magic mushrooms. We've created this extracted version of a stacked compound that doesn't give you nausea. It doesn't, you know, give you depletion afterwards. And it's a product that you're going to take in a very, very low microdose that gives you this entourage effect for a half an hour to an hour. And then you can go back to work and you can drive a car. I don't believe the world is ready to take LSD or anything else in high dosage models. Very, very dangerous.
So, but this product with the name Psilli, so this is being derived from organic materials. But then,
correct.
I assume that then what you're getting at the end result is a consistent product with a consistent dosage range versus, you know, if somebody is just taking some mushrooms, you don't really know how much psilocybin is in there until you've eaten it.
Right? Absolutely. And that's where a lot of people disconnect from this idea of producing these synthetic analogs. Listen, people can create designer drugs all day long. We don't even need new psychedelic companies. You can let the pharmaceutical companies come up with synthetic psychedelics. I mean, if you really look at the two companies that are providing the synthetic psilocybin to the market, it's Consort Medical and it's Sterling. Those are pharmaceutical companies. So what we're trying to say is, just like with cannabis, you can take technology, create botanical analogs, and limit the side effects of taking a bag of magic mushrooms. It actually scares the shit out of me when I read on Reddit, somebody's like, oh, I'm about to take 7 grams of mushrooms. I'm thinking to myself, holy shit, I hope you don't have a child, you're not getting in a car, and whoever's telling you to do this, you might have the worst experience possible. So, no, we are not advocating taking magic mushrooms. What we're advocating is taking a botanical product in a very, very small microdose by the letter of the law in a therapeutic model, which is what we would love to see in Oregon.
Yeah. So then how even did you get to the point of being able to research and produce these products with the market not having gone legal yet? I mean, that's...
Well, number one, we don't produce anything. Okay. Number one, we spent 10 years literally speaking to kitchen chemists, what I call magic makers, people that were permaculturists, cannabis growers. And what we realized is there were these individuals that were usually in their 70s and 80s that had been doing this art of kitchen chemistry, where a lot of them had background in farming. A lot of them were highly educated that had decided they were going to make their own medicines. And through this journey of 10 years, specifically on the island of Maui, we met a lot of these people. And that's how we, you know, put together our compound library, we call it.
Okay. So then it's not actually being produced yet. So then that would be a further stage. Did I lose you?
No. Somebody was calling on the other line. I disconnected them. Let me pull back. Okay, perfect.
Yeah. So then in terms of like investing and all of that, so what are the stages? Where are you at now? Where does this go?
Yeah, where we are at now, and the beauty of this, as we have really taken our time to put this together, now we have a partner in Canada that can actually grow our spores. We can send our spore prints to Canada. They can grow our spore prints. We can get into phase 1A and phase 1B trials, go down the road of animal testing and toxicology, and be on the roadmap to be able to show a product that has very safe efficacy and be able to roll out a therapeutic model where we can go to market at what we call a dollar a dose. That is what our access model looks like.
Wow. So how does that happen? How can you go through all of this development and then, let's say it does end up being a dollar a dose.
It's really simple. We know that we can produce our product for around $50,000 a kilo. A kilo is 1,000,000 milligrams. We know that 1 milligram of product through anecdotal evidence will take you down a 30 to 60 minute entourage effect journey. Even if you look at it as 5 milligrams, not even 1 milligram, the model at a dollar a dose is very, very profitable. So the reality is coming back to the idea that this pharmaceutical model of making products so expensive needs to be rebuilt. The model doesn't work.
Yeah.
So what I find with a lot of people, and I talk to a lot of people that there's a specific medicine that people need when they're insulin, you know, they need specific medicine when they're diabetic. And what we figured out is, like, somebody that is a diabetic needs to spend, if they don't have insurance, I heard $2,000 a month. And we started really looking at this and saying, God, so somebody dies because this pharmaceutical company that makes this medicine, they've already made the money that they need for taking it down the FDA. The price doesn't go down. The price stays up. And that's where the model is broken. We even believe, after spending $500 million through FDA trials, we would still be profitable at a dollar a dose.
Wow, that's really amazing. And I also like what you're describing here of like 30 to 60 minutes as a therapeutic session versus, like, if somebody is taking mushrooms, well, then you have, you know, 45 minutes to an hour onset. Then you have 5 to 6
nobody
hours
wants
of experience.
To deal with that.
Yeah, and that's
nobody
a big
wants
commitment.
To deal with that. Yeah, and it's not always good.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people have told us. They're like, it's not always a good experience. Actually, some 50% of the time, if not more, we hear very negative feedback from people. So I just believe this idea that people are like, oh, well, let us give you this synthetic product because it's something that's going to be safer. We don't know that. You know, they told me when I was 20 years old, oh, take 100 milligrams of Adderall a day. You'll be fine. I'm going to tell you, I've probably spent 20 years of my life removing the residual Adderall out of my system. It wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really easy for us to want to have these miracle products. There's not enough evidence today to say synthetic psilocybin or synthetic MDMA or synthetic anything is the right product. But what I will tell you is we know that botanicals, for the most part, through scientific reviews and studies, are nutritionally better for you and have less side effects than synthetic materials.
So then with these other products that you're looking on developing, or perhaps they're already developed, maybe tell us a little bit what some of these other ones are and how they're related.
Well, so we have three psychedelic compounds that we believe can go to market, you know, pretty quickly. One is our Psilli product, another one is called My MDMA, and another one is called My DMT. All products that are supposed to be taken at a very small mini microdose. Beyond that, we have a company under EI Ventures called Mana Health Labs. Mana in Hawaii means energy. These are all products that are made out of whole plant materials, no isolates, and they all do something with brain cognition, energy, sexual intimacy. They are ways of substituting things that are not that great for you, like energy drinks. There are better ways to take products that can actually give you nutrients. You know, I tell this to my kids all the time. You want to drink a soda? Yeah, you're going to feel good for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then you're going to crash. At least when you're drinking real orange juice, you know, you may have that little sugar high, but it's nutritionally better for you. And that's what we're trying to tell people, is that there are ways to create botanical stacked compounds that are legal today that are actually good for you. And in general, these products are, you know, they're coming out all over the internet. We don't know if our competitors are using good materials or not, but our dedication at EI is only to use whole plant materials that actually come out of real plants.
So then when all this goes into production, like, what is that going to involve?
Well, I mean, we've already started producing the Mana line. I mean, we are in the process of actually taking it to market second quarter of this year. So, you know, for us as this psychedelic company, which really I like to say we are the new standard of pharma, it's not about like being a one-trick pony. It's about having this library of products that can go to market now. And I think that's the unfortunate thing about the psychedelic space. Like, unfortunately, I've taken a lot of, you know, great psychedelic medicine, but I'm actually more excited about our Mana Health line than I am the psychedelics, because these are products that you're going to take on a daily basis that are going to make you feel good consistently. Taking a lot of psychedelics all the time, you're going to drain the serotonin in your brain. You're going to have dehydration. There are specific side effects that come with that. And I think a lot of people don't understand, you can blow your field out by taking too many psychedelics. And it's, you know, there's been lots of evidence to show people that take a lot of psychedelics can have issues with schizophrenia and other things. So we need to be really careful with this, like, oh, everybody should go to the ketamine clinic and get ketamine. It's going to make you feel great. Everybody should be popping magic mushrooms every day. I mean, I talk to people that tell me they're going on ayahuasca journeys once a week.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah. Well, like here in Ashland, you know, we've got the Santo Daime Church, and they meet. Well, I don't know what they're doing now. It's been like 10 years or more since I was attending the church, but I was going, you know, 2-3 times a month. and then you drink 3 to 5 times for work.
I think that, you know, there are no miracles out there. I always tell people you got to be a perpetual beginner. We are very positive about this whole movement. We're just asking people not to ruin it for the companies that are trying to do it right. That's the big deal for us. Let's take lessons out of the cannabis world. Let's take lessons out of the pharmaceutical world, and let's build companies that want to help one another. This goes back to what I said, empathy, seeing things out of other people's lenses.
Yeah. So I think we can go ahead and then talk about the financial side of all of this, because I know that you are running online Q&A workshops. You've got the PDF here, and it is about looking for investors and giving people opportunity to get involved. So what are the different levels at which people can get involved? How do they it? And when should they, you know, as someone who's
whenever they feel like they should. First of all, I invest in companies based on companies that I use and things that I, you know, what's made me successful as an investor is usually investing in something that I would use or that I'm very passionate about. So what we have done is we've made sure that to protect the retail investor and to do it differently than every other psychedelic company is, we are the first company to allow regulation crowdfunding for investors. So unfortunately today at midnight, our Reg CF ends, but be on the lookout because we are gonna have consistent fundraising for unaccredited and accredited investors going on. So if you want to invest $1,000, you can. If you want to invest $10 million, you can. And we just believe that this movement is about power to the people.
And so again, me being someone that I had some stock, I hadn't set up those stocks in the first place. I've never invested in anything. So like, how would I do it, for example? And let's assume that other people listening to this who've never done this.
Yeah, let's say you actually do want to do this and this feels right and it's like, okay, I want to do it. You would actually go to invest.ei. Is it? Yeah. You could go to ei.ventures or invest.ei.ventures. And it would take you to a landing page where you could invest $1,000 through our Reg CF. So I can provide you with all those links. You can give it to the show. But the easiest way to do it is go to ei.ventures, email us. My personal email is david@ei.ventures, no.com. We will lead you in the right direction. But I'm going to say this again. If you're somebody, it's your money for your rent or it's money for your children's education, please do not invest. We do not advocate taking rent money or your last money in your bank account to invest in companies.
Yeah. So let's say I did go and invest $1,000. What would happen next? Like, what
does
that look like? I'm so ignorant in this area.
You'd come with us on this journey. I mean, you'd come with us on the EI journey. You'd become a shareholder in this company. And, you know, this is the collective critical mass theory, as Einstein would say. You know, you put enough people behind something and enough people want to see something happen, it will happen. And so I think with the sign of the times, as we've seen in the last 12 months, it's about collective energy.
Yeah.
EI Ventures is something that I am 1,000% invested in. My family's finances. We believe that this is a revolution that has to happen, which we call the new standard of pharma with an F.
Mm. Nice. Wow. Well, I think we've covered it. But is there anything else that you feel we need to know here on the listening end of all of this?
You know, last thing I'd tell you is invest in yourself. I think if anything that coronavirus and COVID taught us is to take care of ourselves. I actually went for a massage this weekend, which it's been a long time. You know, I used to do a lot of body work. I would tell you, invest in yourself, take care of yourself. Your health is the most important thing in the world. You know, thankfully, there's $2 trillion of investment money out there. And, you know, EI will find its way. But I'm empathetic to all the people that really need to invest in themselves. And that's the message to everyone, is take care of yourself, because if you're not taking care of yourself, you can't take care of the loved ones around you.
So very true. So give us the website one more time of where people can go if they want to check out more of this.
EI.ventures. It can't get easier than that. EI.ventures.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, David. I really appreciate it, getting to speak to you about all of this and get to know you a little bit.
Aloha.
All right. Aloha. Take care.
Awesome. Talk to you soon. Aloha. Bye-bye.
Bye.